What's up? We are back for episode number 2 of Game Over. We've got myself, Joseph Kim, Mr. Oldie but Goody, hopefully, and the young blood, Arthur Chusoff.
What's up?
And yeah, we kind of got off to a rough start, Arthur. I just checked our YouTube numbers. I guess it does take 5 episodes for the algorithm to kick in, but hopefully it does, and we kind of get things rolling. But I think just to get a little bit of higher listenership or viewership, I will kind of double post into not only our Spotify, but also the Game Makers podcast as well. So hopefully we'll get a bigger audience soon. But right now, yeah, it's just us just getting started. So it's kind of exciting to just get things rolling. But how are things going? You just got back from a trip, right?
Yep, New York City. In a few hours, I'm going to Dubai. So I'm like in the middle of things I haven't packed yet. I mean, I packed the toiletries, the essentials for that. How have things been with you, though? You still up in India?
Yeah, I'm in India. I just got back from a wedding this morning. So my first Indian wedding, it was pretty crazy. And yeah, I got to say, like, Indian people love to dance. They love to sing. It's all about family. These weddings are pretty extravagant kinds of deals. And it was really awesome for me to experience.
Yeah, my girlfriend is Indian. We've been thinking about a wedding. And she wants a whole elephant to be present there on a ranch in Santa Fe. I'm like, what the hell? This is awesome.
Yeah. It was my first experience. And yeah, there was a horse. There was all sorts of stuff going on. So that was pretty cool.
Did you ever like found out how cheap they are in India? They're like $4,000 for like a whole, you know, ball, and you know, elephant included, of course. Yeah, it's like really cheap there.
Yeah, it's really cheap. To me, it looked super expensive, but yeah, maybe it's cheaper than I thought.
But you know, what's not cheap right now is the amount of money, according to the top charts, that Lethal Company is still bankrolling at number one.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, good news for Call of Duty, they have risen up to fourth place. Counter-Strike 2 is still in second place in terms of top sellers on Steam. PUBG has also grown by 5 ranks compared to our last episode last week. So it grew, but Baldur's Gate definitely grew as well ever since the Game Awards. And we'll get to that to the end of this episode. Next to that, Destiny 2 climbed 54 places with their latest update that they just released, which has some mixed reviews about that. EA Sports Football Club 2024 specifically has dropped by 4 places. Apex Legends unfortunately dropped by 2 places as well. But Dead by Daylight, with their latest update adding some new spooky characters, has increased by a whole whopping 20 ranks. And finally, a fan favorite, Lost Ark, with their latest drop, I believe, also grew by 12 spots and is now at the number 10 spot on the Steam top sellers. Now tell us about the mobile charts. How are we doing over there? Anything different?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a new number one downloaded on the mobile side. So we've got Black Clover M for mobile from Garena Online. It was actually the game was developed by a Korean studio, but published by Garena. And it is based on the Japanese anime, also called Black Clover. I'm not that familiar with anime, but I did check it out a little bit the other day, and it looks like a pretty interesting anime. Spider Fighting Rope game, which was number one last week, has dropped. Free Fire.
My favorite.
Yeah, it's amazing how they can keep getting all these downloads. It's, I don't know, I think there's something a little shady there. But anyway, Free Fire is number 3. Garena Free Fire is always one of the top downloaded games. Roblox, of course, at number 4. Subway Surfers, Block Blast, Adventure Master, Soul Knight Prequel, 8 Ball Pool. Build a Queen, which seems like it's a hyper-casual game from Supersonic, who is, again, owned by Iron Source, who is owned by Unity. And then Race Master from Sega Games rounds it out at number 10 top downloaded. Now, looking on the revenue side, Monopoly Go has risen 2 ranks to become number 1 in revenue worldwide. So congratulations to them. In a little bit of an interesting controversy over this past week, actually, a friend of mine called into question just how profitable Monopoly Go was, to which Scopely responded back that no, this game is profitable. I actually am a little bit skeptical myself. I think I mentioned it last week that the new owner of Savvy are, you know, Saudi Arabian company, you know, you're going to be heading out there. They are, from what I've heard, they are intent at just making sure they get to number one. This kind of game, it's hard to, I think the tricky part is it's hard to say if they're profitable just because they buy, for free to play, they buy so much in advance with like pretty long payback windows. So I don't think anyone can really say, right? But it's, I would say they were definitely very touchy about it. Number two is Royal Match from Dream Games. That's a game that is just amazing. Roblox, number three, Candy Crush Saga, four, Coin Master, five, Monster Strike, six, Honor of Kings, seven, Genshin Impact, eight, Lineage Mobile, nine, and Phantom Parade comes in at number 10. So it dropped nine ranks from last week when it was number one.
You know what's funny is that Subway Surfers, when I was in New York City, ironically, mm-hmm. people were actually playing that on the train there.
Okay.
So I can see it's definitely still popular. I'm not sure if they do it out of irony or whatnot. But, you know, I just realized something. So when I was doing games for Roblox, they released some marketing material saying, don't capitalize it. Don't capitalize Roblox. It's just Roblox normally. But on these charts, it is.
And like it's like Roblox capitalized as the app name, but then as the developer name, it's in, you know, it's kind of in lowercase. So yeah, that's interesting.
You know, speaking about developers on their platforms, we can make your own games. This tops off our first news story coming from you.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. It's from PocketGamer.biz. It's the article is titled "Unity, I'm Done." Why fundamentally game CEO Oscar Clark is switching platforms. And so Oscar Clark is the CEO of this gaming studio called Fundamentally Games. And he wrote an opinion piece on why he is basically moving on from Unity. And in the article, he speaks about essentially loss of trust that obviously when Unity announced the runtime fees, he was very disappointed in that. But not only the loss of trust, but just an overall lack of support that can completely, according to him, handicap small developers. So in this article, he wrote, quote, "The pronouncement of the runtime license was a final tipping point for a lot of people. The decision to apply what I consider to be a retrospective tax on games ripped apart the illusion that Unity was a developer's friend. Despite some degree of rollback, the damage was done. They had destroyed over a decade of trust." And from there, Oscar goes on to describe basically a critical fuck up by Unity in which Fundamentally Games actually got locked out of their account during a critical period in the game's launch. And the way that he described it is, quote, "A couple of weeks ago, the same game's account was locked out of Unity without notice, telling us that fraudulent activity had been detected. Obviously, we appealed as we didn't have any fraudulent activity and waited for days. In the middle of prepping a strategically important game for us as an indie publisher, we had been crippled and no one at Unity was replying. If I wasn't able to go through back channels that aren't available to every developer, I would never have known what had happened." So yeah, he's very, very upset. You know, on my side and as a mobile game developer working on a shooter game, and we also use Unity, I think that we also have been very disappointed just by not only like lack of support and kind of like the runtime fees issue, but also just the lack of technical execution and that we see in development. So hopefully they improve on that with new leadership and kind of the changes that have happened there. But I do think developers in general just do need to realize the amount of risk there, right? And Unity, for example, has also not ever been profitable. And so there's certainly going to be some changes and things coming up. Hopefully it's for the better. And Unreal, I think, on the other side, which is, you know, the other game engine framework that many developers have opted for or switch over to instead of Unreal. And, you know, I know you've looked at Godot, Arthur, so maybe you can talk about that a little bit. But you know, I think the trade-off is really right now, like, do you go for a more stable and better technical platform like Unreal that has a lot of tools and support and great graphical fidelity, but is terrible at stripped down. And this is more relevant for like mobile developers. I think if you're going for console, like PC, HD side, Unreal's an easier choice. But like if you're going for mobile, like stripping all that down and getting it down to be optimized for lower end devices is very difficult. And then on the Unity side, putting in all the work for the tools, capabilities, functionality, and graphical fidelity is more difficult. So it's like, where do you want to spend your effort? And then certainly I think that the 5% that Unreal takes is going to be a little bit higher. So in success, that might be higher. But you know, on the Unity side, you're going to have your monthly subscription fees and things like that. And then there's Godot, which I'm less familiar with, but I've been a little bit disappointed with Godot from my early investigation in it. But I don't know. What do you think, Arthur? I know you've checked out Godot.
It's pronounced Godot.
Godot.
People kept saying Godot. Or like they just say the acronym G-O-D-O-T or Godot. No, that's the common one I heard, Godot. Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, in my perspective, I have a lot of friends in the indie industry that have been swapping to Godot or Godot. Okay. Because one, it's free.
Sure.
And it's super easy to learn. It's kind of like God's own subset of communities and plugins you can get, much like Unity, mm-hmm. but the key word, it's entirely free and not in the financial sense, but also it's just open source.
Right.
Like it's, yeah, don't have any of this control stuff. You don't have these back channel issues like you have with Unity. It's free. It's open. It's simple. You just make a game on it. But I mean, compared to Roblox, you got some porting issues. Actually, I'm not even going to say some. It's like you straight up have porting issues.
Right.
But you got a lot more freedom and flexibility, especially for a free program. It just feels like here's a free game engine, go make something. But that's really the attitude because it's not as strong as a community as Unity, or especially as Unreal with the massive amount of developers there. Yep. I'd say it's like if you're coming from Roblox like I did, it's a really awesome place to start.
Yeah.
But it's not an awesome place to end on, let alone continue.
Right. I would agree with you, Arthur. I do think that it's kind of like down to who are you, right? Like if you're a bigger pro team, Godot is probably going to be a little bit more difficult for you just because it's also, from my initial investigation, highly biased towards its own proprietary script, the GD script. And most mm-hmm. of the resources and learning is for GD script. And most of the problem solutions are in GD script rather than C++ or C#. And similar to Unity, but even more so, lacking a lot of tools, capabilities, functionality. And as you mentioned, there's the porting issues as well. And I think in terms of language support, I think C++ is there. Is C# was in beta or is that there yet? I don't know.
C# and Godot, I believe so.
Okay.
But I think overall, like, I think it's just a good transitional platform coming from something much more simpler, is like Roblox.
Right.
I mean, there's some games that I have enjoyed that were made on Godot, such as, you know, Curly Squad and Brotato. They were some fun, and Curly Squad especially is a successful Godot game.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes to realize in retrospect, Godot is like it's an engine you use to make a game by yourself. It's not very proper for teams, as you mentioned.
Right.
It's like a very, hey, I'm a kid in high school. I want to learn how to make games and discover the unfortunate truth of AAA later on. Like, this is a perfect, you know, part to start on.
Right. Okay, maybe moving on. Next news item is basically, happy to announce that Stormgate, the RTS actually being developed by my friend Tim Morton at his studio Frost Giant, has been able to fully fund their Kickstarter. And it was actually, I think, their target of 100K was basically fully funded in just 15 minutes. The article that I read about with the story, at the time they published, they had raised about 720K, so over 700% of their goal. Just looking about an hour ago at the Kickstarter campaign, so today, December 10th, it's gone even further and hit 1.3 million. And if anyone out there listening has not backed this project, I highly recommend you do. And for those of you who are not familiar with the game, I've already bought my Founders Pack. If you're not familiar with Stormgate, it's basically a spiritual successor to StarCraft by a lot of the same folks from Blizzard that have worked on Warcraft and StarCraft. And it's basically going to be a free-to-play RTS launching on Steam next year with campaign mode, co-op, multiplayer. Also, we'll have a map editor. I also actually recorded a podcast on the Game Makers podcast with Tim before about Stormgate. But, and, you know, if we can get Game Over here rolling past five episodes, let's bring Tim on and we can talk to him, Arthur. I think it'd be cool absolutely. To talk to him about Stormgate. So let's see. And maybe some other, you know, kind of exciting notes about Stormgate, a couple of tidbits. First of all, Simu Liu, the actor, basically the dude that played Shang-Chi from the Marvel movie, is playing one of the main characters in the game. But even cooler than that, for those of you, and again, me coming from the older game dev, you know, community, and having played all the old Warcraft and Starcraft games, a lot of us are going to be familiar with Chris Metzen, who was a lead designer, creative director, basically kind of like the lore master for many of the Warcraft and Starcraft titles. Well, they were able to, Frost Giant was able to bring him in to do the story and lore for Stormgate. So hopefully the story will be as good as some of those old stories. So hopefully it'll be really great for that game. And a couple other things I think is interesting to discuss related to what Frost Giant is trying to do with Stormgate is really this notion about, you know, RTS and where RTS is a genre today. And I think there's like a bigger strategic issue to consider. So first of all, if you were to ask, when I talk to my, you know, a lot of folks at Riot or X-Riot, a lot of them talk about how they believe that RTS today may not actually even be a viable genre, that in fact, MOBAs have kind of been the evolution of RTS and RTS is kind of left behind. And so, you know, there's kind of like this thinking by some folks that maybe RTS is not as big or as viable as it used to be. I don't know. I personally think that RTS, it just needs to be done well to be able to reach, you know, mass popularity as in the past and as it was popular in the past. And, you know, it's not something that I've talked to Tim about personally, but, you know, kind of like what's been what a lot of people, at least in like the LA gaming community, talk about. And one other thing, when I talked to some folks who were at Blizzard, ex-Blizzard, is they actually sent me a link to this video from this guy named Thor, basically an ex-Blizzard guy, who talked about the perspective at Blizzard about, you know, RTS games and why Blizzard stopped supporting RTS. And Arthur, you got some thoughts on this?
Thor is actually a real life friend of mine's down here in Seattle.
Oh, really?
And he has a lot of perspective on the whole RTS genre, mainly like it's a huge niche now. Like I remember when Age of Empires was huge, when Age of Empires 4 recently came out.
Yeah.
Kind of went under the radar. So like Thor has some like really wise quotes here to say regarding the perspective, especially from a giant like Blizzard.
Okay. So yeah, let's actually watch this quote from Thor and see what he has to say.
Yeah, here's the biggest sadness, dude. I worked 2 years of overtime straight on StarCraft II, Wings of Liberty. StarCraft II, Wings of Liberty made less money than the horse, the first Sparkle Pony horse in World of Warcraft. A $15 microtransaction horse made more money than StarCraft II. That's it. That's the whole meme, dude. You're wondering why these companies do microtransactions? Because dipshits keep buying all of them.
Wow. So, essentially...
he's a very, like, direct and brutal guy, like... I love him, but he's got some opinions, especially on me, but I love him. He's a great guy. He gets to the point. Thor is awesome.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? I mean, that's just crazy. So basically, you know, Thor's point about, you know, if you can just do one microtransaction sell in WoW and make more money than all of StarCraft 2, then why wouldn't you just, you know, why wouldn't you just focus on other genres? But anyway, I definitely hope that, you know, I'm more optimistic. I think RTS can make a comeback. I think it can be monetized with some innovation, and hopefully it'll be big again.
It just, I guess it's just a trend right now because you got MOBAs taking over. I think it's subsequently from the whole esports scene is growing huge, and MOBAs are like a huge esport genre, which I'm surprised because like I feel like RTSs would fit into that category really well, but they were never really marketed as like these competitive esports games. I think that's why they're being overshadowed by like MOBAs, really.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you could kind of tweak it. Like one of the things I kind of feel is that maybe RTS, I mean, not that you need to go down to the champion level, but if you can shift to a little bit less macro, a little bit more micro, I do think that there are things that you can still do to tweak the RTS genre to try and make it a little bit more relevant to a modern day audience. But I don't know. We'll see. I'm in the camp where I think RTS can get figured out to be super popular and to monetize better. And hopefully Storm Giant or Frost Giant with Stormgate is able to be the guys that do it. But we'll see. All right. And moving on, third story for me, Sega, which is a company I used to work for, is working on a super game with a budget expected to be over $800 million. Now that's a pretty crazy number.
That's some movie stuff right there. That's some movie stuff right there.
So anyway, this is a story reported by Rectify Gaming. And they basically essentially highlighted this Sega Sammy 2023 integrated report, which is basically something like their annual report. And I kind of dug in and found the reference that they were talking about. But yeah, it seems like Sega really wants to do something big, bold, and innovative when I was going through the report. And maybe I can also just read to the audience a quote from the report in which they state, "We are also making steady headway in development of the super game that we are seeking to create in the medium to long term. As the name implies, a super game involves the concept of a game that stands head and shoulders above normal games. I encourage stakeholders to look forward to the fruit of our efforts, which include R&D to create a game that builds a whole worldview involving the entire gaming ecosystem, including not only players, but also streamers who stream the game and their viewers." End quote. Anyway, it's not clear exactly what Sega intends, but it does sound like it's a pretty bold vision. As they mentioned, it's going to include a whole ecosystem, and it's part of something that they call Vision for 2030. So it looks like they may be working on this for a while. We may not see it in the short term, but you know, I guess sometime within the next 7 years, we'll be able to see what's happening with Sega's super game.
Wow.
Any thoughts on that?
It's going to be like a whole new job, a whole new industry, like $800 million? I guess there's going to be like super gamers versus gamers now. Like,
we'll see.
Like, I don't know how a game can stand head and shoulders. Like, I'm just like boggled up by that. You know, especially with like the previous release, Sonic Frontiers, which is a great game, although some diehard Sonic fans don't really like it. I personally loved it. But they're just transitioning to make it a whole new genre, which is kind of bonkers to me. Is there like any other final thoughts you have on this? Because I'm just at a loss for words regarding this. Like $800 million.
Yeah, I don't know. It does sound like it's pretty ambitious. You know, it's interesting. They're definitely taking some risks. I think Sega, when you look at, for example, the recent acquisition of Rovio, and now the Super Game, clearly they want to try and be very aggressive. You know, I think that's good. I mean, you know, life short, YOLO. If you're gonna go, why not go big?
Have they always been like an aggressive company? Because Sega to me seems like a really chill.
Yeah.
Really?
No. Yeah. They've always tried to do things fairly aggressive. Aggressively, historically, you know, they've always tried to, you know, whether it's with Western initiatives or other things. I mean, you know, I would say that, you know, I think that, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, they haven't, you know, I think there's been a lot of issues with Japanese companies having like tons of success out West besides, you know, some of the the platform guys like Sony and Nintendo, but you know, we'll wish him the best, and I guess we'll see what happens by 2030 for the Super Game.
I wonder if they ever get back in the platform scene again, run back the 90s. That will be the day.
I doubt it, but you know what they should have done is they should have done more of a store, like kind of like,
oh yeah,
you know, kind of like Steam, but
the Sega anyway, store. Yeah, I can imagine it. Old giant blue
that,
tech.
Yeah, that window is probably not a past, but yeah, I think there was a window where they could have taken a shot at that.
Well, speaking of Super Games, I think we are excited to talk about the biggest news in gaming in like a decade, basically. Well, is it really a decade? Oh my God, it has been a decade since the previous Grand Theft Auto installment. Ladies and gentlemen, Grand Theft Auto 6 has been announced this past week. In a very unfortunate way, the trailer, according to IGN, actually came out suddenly right before its original plan due to a leak in social media. And Rockstar vigilantly noticed it after just like a few moments. So this game trailer came out of nowhere. Actually, it came out when I was on my flight to New York City. I had no Wi-Fi. I'm like, I'm going to fall asleep early tonight when I get to New York so I can wake up like 8 a.m. and watch this because I'm excited. I was planning to watch my brother live, but they revealed it. This generation's biggest game, Grand Theft Auto 6, has been revealed. And everyone's excited. Like, so excited, broke records on social media. On YouTube, 100 million views in 24 hours. It's like super hype. Like, this is awesome. There's just so much buzz on social media about this. Not a single controversy, really, except for this other guy. He calls himself the Miami Joker. Have you heard about this guy in Florida?
I think I've seen his picture. Yeah, the tattoo face guy.
Yeah, so according to Kotaku, as the trailer came out, everyone's excited, everyone's happy, but this one gent is not. So the thing about Grand Theft Auto is that's always been parodying real-life American, you know, culture and moments and pop culture too. And actually, that was really the core of the trailer. It was just this, you know, showing off this huge reimagination of Vice City, which is major nostalgia for people that played Vice City, which is argued to be the premier Grand Theft Auto in the whole 3D franchise. I'm personally a San Andreas fan, but in the trailer, which was very heavily focused on making fun of social media and showing off the whole Florida man aspect, as my brother who lives in Florida described it as, the Miami Joker, the famous Miami Joker, was featured and parodied in the trailer too. And I won't lie, it's kind of one-on-one. I'm not taking any sides here, but he recently started attacking Rockstar in legal means because he wants, as he says, a mill or two for his inspiration in the game. And I don't know, like, do you think like developers should just pay out royalties even for just simple inspirations in games like that? Like,
yeah, I don't know what the legal is, but I would have to assume that Rockstar's legal has already taken a look at that before they, you know. And it's pretty, I think the a lot of the inspirations that happened, I mean, they're pretty public, right? And then, I don't know, there was also like that controversy in Fortnite where the guy that did the floss tried to see Fortnite. I don't know what happened with that, but yeah, certainly there's some legal issues there.
Thing is, like, this is not the first rodeo Rockstar had when it came to like drawing real life inspiration of a figure. Lindsay Lohan, I believe, tried to sue Rockstar over Grand Theft Auto 5 due to her like visual appearance being used as like one of the marketing loading screen characters that, you know, dominates the aesthetic of the Grand Theft Auto series, and that completely failed. So I mean, I think in the long run of things, this is not going to go anywhere. You know, I did mention previously like everyone's happy about this except this Miami Joker guy, but I will say the PC gaming community is a bit disappointed because according to an article from Games Radar, from a former Red Dead Redemption 2 developer, Grand Theft Auto 6 seems to not be coming to PC initially and not coming for a longer time. Because when the game was announced, it said Xbox and PlayStation. That's it. I mean, Rockstar has had this tradition where they release the PC port a couple years later. But I think that's the only disappointing factor in the announcement of this otherwise major league game, or as Sega might call it, a super game. I don't know. Are you like more of a console player? Like, do you plan on getting Grand Theft Auto 6?
You know, I've never been a huge Grand Theft Auto player personally. I generally tend more towards like RPG shooters and other games for a console. But, you know, I did cover with a few friends Take-Two, and I do know that the ambitions Rockstar has for this game is very high. They think this game is going to kill it, and hopefully it does. I hope it does really well for them.
I mean, you've seen the trailer, right?
Yeah, man, the trailer looks great.
Dude, it like looks too real to be good, you know, like to be true. I mean, like the graphics are just, for an open world game, those graphics are outstanding. Like, we're finally, we made it to our point in lives where we get to see these games look way better than real life themselves. And the thing is, with how Rockstar trailers have been, these won't even be the final visuals, the final graphics. It'll be more improved. Assuming tradition with the development from Rockstar Cycle. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, I think it's smart to like really be referencing like very current modern day culture, because when I do think of like Grand Theft Auto, like the image in my mind is a little bit dated, right? Like kind of like older kind of 90s, 2000s rather than kind of modern day. So bringing all those influences into the game and, you know, kind of highlighting the fact that it's kind of updated and modern and current, I think is smart of them.
I'm pretty sure, you know, trying to keep it modern, because, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 was set in the modern day, and it really helped supplement the gameplay of the online aspect, which, you know, and I both know Grand Theft Auto 5's main source of income was the online mode. You know, I guess the use of the internet in the game, your smartphone to act as like a hub for everything, can't really be replicated. Doesn't take place in like the modern day, I think, because everyone's expecting, oh, it's going to take place in the 80s again, like Vice City. But no, it's going to be taking place in modern day, which honestly, I'm really excited to see. Really excited to see their interpretation of my home state. But, you know, speaking of awesome super games from Sega and now Rockstar, we're going to talk about a super failure.
Okay.
Have you heard of this game called The Day Before?
I haven't.
I haven't either, and I only recently found out because Forbes published an article. Actually, many news outlets and many angry Reddit posts have posted about this. So apparently The Day Before has released this week and has descended to the top 10 worst-rated Steam games on the platform. Wow. And the main attribute of that is that the marketing completely lied about what is the game. It was marketed as like a MMO, I believe, but it turns out it's an extraction shooter, which, are you familiar with that genre? It's becoming like popular.
That's what I'm working on.
Oh, well, make sure to market it as that, because the fans of this game are pretty pissed. It sunk in ratings. Many refunds were distributed. Everyone is disappointed because they just felt lied to about what this game is. It's not like some sort of post-apocalypse survival MMO that everyone loves to play, especially, you know, Fallout taking off with 76 with their latest updates. I never seen this before because, you know, when games usually come out, people initially have like mixed reviews, and then it goes down and down, assuming it gets shittier and shittier. This game just fell to the bottom and has not been finding any success recently. It's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how they got away with just lying about what the game genre is. Like, that's a whole different type of misconception through marketing.
Yeah. Well, I do know that there's a lot of additional extraction games coming from what I hear. So I think over the next year or two, there should be a bunch more, at least on the PC console side, more extraction shooters coming. We'll see how they do. But on the mobile side, there's not too many. So
how did like extraction shooters become popular? Like, how did you notice that as a trend? Was it like from Ubisoft?
Well, I mean, it was, No, it was from Tarkov, Escape from Tarkov, right?
Ah, and so, right.
Like, yeah, just, I mean, I think that, you know, that it was Escape from Tarkov was really, really seminal in terms of influencing people with that new kind of a model. And I think for a lot of people, you know, there's like this feeling that there's going to be something new. Although I do think like what Activision has done with Call of Duty and the way that they've kind of modified Battle Royale with Warzone and, you know, I think like the innovations that they've been putting into Battle Royale are great. But certainly I think if you're a smaller studio, you're probably not going to try and go head on in Battle Royale against the Kraftons and the Activisions and all the other guys out there.
So would you say it's like a very big open market right now, extraction shooters?
I think it's on the PC console side, I think it's going to be tough. I think you really have to figure out how you're going to do things differently. But yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to a few. You know, I'm looking forward to, I think Marathon from Bungie is supposed to be extraction. I think that's one I'm keeping an eye out. Yeah. You know, there's a few others I'm keeping an eye out on, but yeah, we'll see over the next year or two if any of these can do well. But yeah, to the point that you made about David Ford, if you're going to be an extraction shooter, you should market yourself as an extraction shooter rather than an MMO.
I actually just realized, but remember how I mentioned the finals last week?
Mm-hmm.
Our first episode, I realized that's actually an extraction shooter in hindsight.
It's kind of extraction / Payday, you know, like heist tactical a little bit. Yeah.
I guess it's of course like an extraction shooter, but like for a nice extraction shooter, you want to stand out in the market. I assume they just want to theme it. Like it's a bit like Payday-ish and they did a really awesome job with it. It's been a fun experience.
Yeah. That game, everyone who I've talked to who's played it is really, really hype on that game. So.
Oh yeah. My friends were really excited for it. Actually, didn't it just come out? Because I read a text from my friend saying it's out.
Oh, okay.
I was in New York City.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that it was out.
Hold on, let me actually make sure. It is out. Yeah, it came out a couple of days ago.
All right, well, we should cover next week. We'll see how it does over the next week.
All right. Well, you know, speaking of games coming out, we unfortunately do have some news of the quite opposite.
Okay.
Fans of EA's, you know, nostalgic multiplayer games such as, you know, Dead Space 2, Crysis 3, which is a huge favorite of mine. A lot of the Battlefield bad companies, including the 1943, which I grew up playing on like, the Xbox Indie Store, Dante's Inferno, Mirror's Edge Catalyst, the multiplayer aspects of those popular classics have shut down for good today. The thing is, like, Mirror's Edge and Dead Space and Crysis are, like, single-player focused games. But they still had a huge, fun multiplayer aspect. But it's been a long time coming with EA announcing it a couple months ago. And it's kind of a sad day because Battlefield Bad Company 1 and 2 in 1943, some of which are considered the best in the franchise, you can't play them anymore. It's a bit sad there. Have you played any of these games before?
Not the games that you mentioned, but I will say that you know, that's the problem with some of the, like, trying to add multiplayer to a premium game experience, right? Is that you've got like these ongoing operational costs to support the multiplayer and keeping servers up and things like that. And so, you know, it's something that even like, you know, recently with the success of that small team that made BattleBit, you got to think, sure, they were successful, but now they're kind of on the hook to just keep that game operating. The longer that they support the game, the more money they're going to lose. You know what I'm saying? So it's a little bit of a interesting dynamic at play in terms of charging, like having a premium pricing model for an ongoing multiplayer game where you've got ongoing operating costs. And so then what do you do? Do you say, well, like, and especially if you're a small developer, you know, you're just going to keep the game running, but you've already collected your money. So
are you given signs ahead of time? So like telling you, the developer, like, hey, we got to shut this game down to save some money. Like what prompts that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be up to every individual developer to make that call, or to try and figure out how to shift the monetization model, or to provide enough updates that would then continue to cover operating costs, right? So then they would charge additional money for some kind of expansion pack or update of some kind. But yeah, that becomes really tricky. So, you know, it's one of the advantages of having more of a free-to-play model. So at least you're able to then support ongoing operational costs. And so we've got some of these games that have been, you know, whether it's like Clash of Clans or Clash Royale, that's just been operating forever.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Escape from Tarkov before. I think it's like one of those rare instances of a premium game that's still going through its like monetization, which I just wonder how they do it, because like it's a high price tag to actually enter with a lot of different editions, and then you can play the game with some extra monetization. And I just think they have a really good position, because that screams long-term stability to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a sad day for those games. But going back to the good days of games, as we jump up and then jump down and jump up again, the Game Awards just happened. Did you watch the stream at all?
I didn't, although I, you know, on Twitter/X, I was catching a little bit of the controversy. Also on LinkedIn, I was hearing about some complaints and then people attacking and defending Jeff Keighley, I guess. So I didn't follow too much. Sorry? I think he's, you know, kind of associated with the gaming awards. But so I read a little bit about some of the complaints and things, but, you know, I wasn't following it too closely.
Right. Well, I got the whole list, the summary list of all the awards for some of our reviews that did not come into the stream or watch it at all. It's a big list, but I'll go by very quickly. And actually, it's going to be an easy list, because you notice a consistent theme here. To start, Player's Voice, Baldur's Gate 3-1, Best Esports Event, League of Legends Worlds Championship, Best Esports Coast, Christine Potter Chi, Best Esports Team, JD Gaming, Best Esports Athlete, Lee Faker, who plays League of Legends. Best Esports Game, Valorant, which honestly kind of deserves it. It knocked out of the park with its updates and support this year. Content Creator of the Year, Iron Mouse. Most Anticipated Game, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Best Multiplayer Game, this is where things get consistent, Baldur's Gate 3. Best Sports Racing Game, Forza Motorsport. Best Sim Strategy, Pikmin 4, actually. Best Family Game, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. I have yet to touch that. I'll check it out. Best Fighting Game, Street Fighter 6, obviously. That's a hell of a fun game. They knocked it out of the park. Best RPG, Baldur's Gate 3. Best Action Adventure Game, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Best Action Game, Armored Core 6. Best VR AR Game, Resident Evil Village. Best Mobile Game, Honkai Star Rail. Have you checked that out?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Quite good.
Best Debut Indie Game, Cocoon. Best Independent Game, Sea of Stars. Best Community Support, Baldur's Gate 3. Best Ongoing Game, Cyberpunk 2077. Highly agree with that opinion. Games for Impact, Chicha is the winner. Innovation Accessibility, Forza Motorsport. Best Performance, Neil Nubon, Astarion in Baldur's Gate 3. Best Audio Design, Hi-Fi Rush, which makes sense. It's a super audio-based game and knocks out of the park with its uniqueness. Best Score in Music, Final Fantasy 16. Best Art Direction, that's why it makes me happy, Alan Wake 2. I love how they represent my stay in that. Best Narrative, Alan Wake 2. Best Adaptation, The Last of Us TV Show. Best Game Direction, Alan Wake 2. Game of the Year, Baldur's Gate 3. That is the summary of the Game Awards. How do you feel about all these just award winners?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do think... And I don't have a strong opinion on it, because I haven't gotten deeply enough into Baldur's Gate 3 to, like, I've only played a little bit. But, you know, I think most people who are not happy are feeling like Spider-Man 2 got snubbed. But, you know, it is what it is.
I'm actually a bit disappointed about Spider-Man 2. Like, I don't even, like, I'm surprised I didn't want anything because that game was fantastic. Yeah, it knocked it out of the park, especially like any Marvel games. But that reminds me of the biggest thing that caught my attention at Game Awards was that Marvel with Bethesda themselves announced my favorite Marvel character's own game, Blade. Have you seen that?
I did not see that. I should check it out.
So there, I'll just read from Bethesda's own blog post about this, but Blade's game, which is actually really hyped up right now because Blade's been like a name you haven't heard since the 2000s. It's going to take place in in a quarantine section of Paris. You know, vampires have emerged. And they just begun development on the game, which has an original story in the universe of Blade, which I'm really excited for because we haven't like consumed any Blade media in the recent while. It's always been about the Avengers. So I'm surprised that this just came out of nowhere. It's not so much information out on this, but everyone's excited for it. The only concern is like people think, is it like a Xbox exclusive? Because there's not that much information about it. They just like drop this. It's from Bethesda. It's also from the people who made Deathloop and Dishonored, which the wonderful developers, Arkane. It's like the perfect mix. I'm excited. People assume it's going to be like some sort of parkour game. People assume it's going to be some sort of RPG. We'll find out as more information comes out for it, but I think that's the biggest game announcement from the Game Awards.
Nice. Yeah, I'd love to see a Blade remake as a movie as well. That'd be pretty awesome.
I really wish. Yeah, is Wesley Snipes still in jail?
I don't know, but if you got someone like Michael B. Jordan or something like that, I think that would be pretty dope. But anyway.
That would be dope.
All right. Any more news?
I guess the only news we got left is what have we been playing?
Well, you know, just here at the office over the past week, I knew like a new Call of Duty Warzone map dropped. And I think some of the guys here have been playing that a lot. I think they've been grinding they've been grinding that like crazy. I think they think it's really good. So if you're a Call of Duty player, I think you want to check that out. And for me personally, I've been starting to get into the number one downloaded game, Black Clover Mobile. And I think that they've done a lot of really interesting things with some of the systems designed in that game. And so you can kind of think about it as a kind of an updated, like a modern day Summoner's War. But some of the things that they've done have been pretty clever. And so I'm just kind of checking it out more from the purpose of not really like playing for fun, but playing as a game developer and trying to study the way that they've implemented a lot of their monetization systems. But it does look like it's a pretty good game. What about you, Arthur?
Awesome. So as I mentioned before at the beginning of this podcast, I've been traveling. So I haven't been playing much, but I recently did finish up Alan Wake 2, and I was playing through some Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
That's a lot of twos. Alan Wake 2, I finished it up. I think this is a rare thing for me to say about a game. It's a perfect 10 out of 10. Highly recommend everyone go play it. If you love Twin Peaks, you like the Twilight Zone, and you like the whole Pacific Northwest aesthetic, you're going to love Alan Wake. They knock out of the park with the narrative of it.
Okay.
And of course, Spider-Man 2, playing through it. Gameplay is so fun, enjoyable, especially coming back from New York City. I'm like, wow, this is just like New York City. Other than that, the only other game I touched on was, again, Lethal Company, because the developer has been adding updates back and forth, listening to the community. So there's some small new stuff if you want to check it out, but nothing too major right now. So that's why I've been doing my personal gaming adventures.
Yeah, I know I've got two sons and they've been playing a lot of Lethal Company. So
have they introduced it to you?
Well, they just basically, the reason I know is like, I'm here in India, but they're in the States and they're like, hey, can we get permission to buy Lethal Company? I was like, okay, whatever, fine. So I know they've been playing, but yeah.
That's good. That's good.
Cool. Well, I think that's it, Arthur, unless there's anything else.
Nope.
All right. Then I think we should call it. So if you are watching, thank you so much. Please give us a like. Thank you for watching. We're just getting this thing kicked off. So I'm glad you're with us. And we will catch you next time. Bye, everybody.
See y'all.